So we're into day two of 2026, and you may be wondering when you're going back to work and also what New Year's resolutions you're very likely to not keep. It is with that in mind that in this episode, Daisy Bird explores the role of emotional intelligence in building resilient, high-performing teams. From understanding individual triggers to creating environments where people feel seen, supported, and able to do their best work, Daisy explains why emotional awareness is a leadership skill, not a soft extra. Keep listening for our last few episodes of this series featuring Finfluencer Rachel Harris, Lenise Brothers on female founder health, and Emily Austin on productivity. Hi, Daisy. Welcome to How to Start Up. I'm very excited that we're having this conversation. How are you?
I'm good, Jules. Nice to see you. Thank you for having me. I've been a big fan of your podcast and admiring your work for a long time.
Oh, well, I'm thrilled to have you on. And I know we've talked about it for a while. So it's fantastic that we're finally putting it in our diaries and making it happen. Because I know when you run service-based businesses, it's probably the last thing on the list is to take time out and talk about what you're actually doing in the day-to-day. Before we get into it, I'd love it if you could introduce yourself and a bit about the business that you founded.
So I'm Daisy Bird, and I set up a creative communications agency in 2010 that's always specialized exclusively in luxury travel, hotels, and wellness brands.
And you've just celebrated 15 years, so huge congratulations. Everyone said to me, just get to five years. And I know in the last 5 years, the world's fallen apart about 100 times, but in 15 years, you'll have seen it all. What were the key motivators for you in setting up your business at such a young age as well?
I think youth was actually a gift. I sometimes wonder if I'd have had the strength and the courage to set up my own business at my age with more responsibilities from an earnings perspective, or I have children. So I think being young and very passionate about what I was doing at the time and knowing that I wanted to just narrow my focus a bit. I was very lucky to work with incredible brands in the hotel and travel industry and for amazing people. I really always admired and respected my employers, and I learned a lot from them. I got to a stage where I just wanted to only work with brands that felt really aligned with my interests and my passion points and my values.
And looking back at your startup self, what are you most proud of?
I think I am most proud of being selective about the brands and the people that I worked with. That was the intention from the get-go, to align myself with brands, destinations, and people that aligned with my personal taste, my values, because that's where the magic happens. If you're really passionate about the brands that you represent, especially in my industry where my role is to champion them, to endorse them, to promote them, to tell their stories. From my perspective, it's got to be driven by passion and genuine interest. And I knew from an earlier age that I'm extremely effective when I'm interested and passionate about things. And when a brand doesn't align with my values or my purpose, I'm not so effective. So that really is what I'm most proud of. And actually, really, there were times when I turned down lucrative briefs, which could have propelled my business earlier, but it didn't feel aligned with my integrity. And there were definitely times where I questioned why I was doing that. And then when big crises happened, like COVID, it suddenly really made absolute sense to me why I'd made those decisions, because our relationships, our client partnerships were very human. They were very meaningful. There was a lot of love and care and passion from both sides and honoring of a partnership, which meant that I think we came through it strong. You know, we retained our clients and we retained our staff.
That's incredible in a travel business. Oh my goodness. I've never heard anyone actually be able to do that through COVID, because everything just fell apart. But you're right to be proud of that. And also, I think to know that at such a young early age in your career is amazing, because I just toe the line of working for luxury brand after luxury brand, thinking, great, lovely job, great, work hard for someone else. And I didn't ever really feel like I fitted in, but you listened to that gut feeling quite early on and took the plunge. But what would you maybe have done differently looking back?
I wish I'd had more confidence from the get-go. If I'd have realized that it would have been quicker than I'd anticipated to win clients, I might have resourced the business more quickly, hired more senior talent early. However, I was always into a kind of slow and steady approach rather than scaling too quickly.
And people are the hardest part in any business, because you read a CV, You don't know if they've got intuition, integrity, initiative, all of those amazing skills. And I don't know why they call them soft skills, because they're bloody hard to find. But that kind of thing, people are expensive and they take a lot of time and energy from you. And it's hard because then you're not doing the do as much anymore. You've got other people doing the do. On that, how have you approached recruiting people in? What lessons have you learned?
We spend a lot of time with our coworkers, and we're in a people business with service providers. We've got to gel as a team, but also with our clients. I think I've always been quite careful to matchmake individuals with the right brands, because not everyone is as effective on one brand or one sector as they are on another. I really look for skilled people with similar work ethics and values, but I look for individuality. I don't want clones of myself, for example. I think in this day and age, especially working with luxury brands, people with high disposable wealth aren't all going to be the same kind of personality types or with the same backgrounds or education. So I do look for diversity and for people to look through a different lens and approach communication strategies with individuality.
How important is emotional intelligence when you're looking to bring people into your business?
Hugely important. I think as well as learned skills and practical skills and network and strategy, having empathy and being able to read mood and sentiment, not just our clients, but our colleagues, but also customers. You know, at the end of the day, brand strategy. One of the things I love the most about my business is really diving very deep into a brand, understanding what that brand represents, their positioning, and their customer profile, and then adapt all our strategies around that.
If you're going to take it off their plate and communicate on their behalf, you have to know every nut and bolt of that business. And in the travel sector, it's people. And I was laughing with a friend the other day saying, bloody hell, people are really annoying, because you've got yourself that you have to manage, you have your team you have to manage, you have your clients who are also people you have to manage. And then in our roles with podcast production and PR, you've got journalists that you then need to manage. So it's all people who can all have a bad day. But for your team, where you work really hard together, you do many hours together, how do you tackle that? How do you know when you meet somebody that they're going to be a good fit?
It's tricky. We don't always get it right, but I think we look for kindred spirits as well as skills. We've done a lot of coaching over the past few years, which has been really, really helpful. It started with me. I've always believed in coaching, and I've worked with various coaches over 10, 12 years. And then I realized that I wanted to bring that into the business, and I've had to start slowly. So with my senior leadership team to help us design a really cohesive and collaborative leadership structure, and now bringing that down to sort of managerial level. So I think that around 10 people have coaching now. And ultimately, I want to bring that into the entire business, because it's been very helpful for the individuals to have an external resource to help them with their personal development, to dial up their leadership skills, but also from a, you know, personal perspective, really growing self-awareness. We've used, thanks to our coaching partner, a really useful sort of personality testing, psychometric testing tool, which has helped us individually grow self-awareness and also share with one another how we can get the best out of each other. It's helped me design teams. And actually, I've used that in final stage of interview process with senior hires to understand where we need to dial up certain energies and certain teams and certain skill sets, and where it might be too much to have too many of the same personalities in one team. So yeah, I found that fascinating. I found it very helpful for myself as a leader, and to express to some of my colleagues my own tendencies, how they can get the best out of me, how they can manage up to me, the do's and don'ts, and really understand other people. I think it's been most helpful for more introverted personalities who don't express themselves as openly as some of the more extrovert personalities.
Yes, because I find I am very analytical and OCD, and I work with a lot of creatives, and sometimes like, but how can you just not fill in the spreadsheet? How can you just not get that process? And they are over there, got 100 ideas at once. And so if I was probably a little bit more aware of that from the get-go, I'd be more sympathetic, and they'd be able to explain how I work the best. But that is a huge investment, both in money and time in your team. Is it something you'd recommend for new founders to consider at the beginning of their businesses to get to know themselves a bit better?
Absolutely. I think I've always been self-aware, but I think I was maybe a bit ashamed to admit where I wasn't so strong. So I think in the early days, I thought I was meant to know it all and be everything and wear every hat. You and I would have been like dream business partners, because I need around me people who are incredibly analytical, practical, data-driven, excellent at process and organization, because I can get carried away by ideas. You know, I can have a million ideas at once and I can initiate lots of things, but I really need a lot of really practical people around me to get the task done. So if I'd known that in the early days, I might have hired senior people to balance out my strengths. But I'm now very lucky that I have excellent people around me, including a very fantastic managing director who balances out where I'm not so strong and can help really drive the business.
I would contradict that, though. There is no luck in this. You have just slogged and slogged and then decided to put money back into the business to do the coaching and invest in those people. Because we've chatted over the years about people and structure and teams and trust and delegation and loyalty and all of these things that you kind of hope people are going to bring back to the business. And when you're leading and you're paying every salary out every month, it can feel quite of a drain sometimes when you're not being fueled back. But do you feel more supported now that your team are more aware of you and who you are?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you have to be open with your senior people. I'm a real collaborator. So whilst I'm the sort of sole business owner and the founder, I like to canvas my people to make opinions. And I really care about what they want and need in the business.
Well, you need them to be good. You're paying them to be better at things than you are sometimes.
Exactly. I've got people who are significantly more skilled than me in certain areas of the business, and I default to them and I champion them to the clients, and I will delegate certain projects to real specialists within the team. I've always embraced difference. I certainly don't want a team that is all working like robots. You know, it's got to be customized and personal how we deliver service to our clients, and pulling resource from different teams. If someone is really excellent with having a network in, for example, the art world or the fashion set, or is an absolute demon at organizing events or partnerships, then we'll pull resource from that team or that individual, because collectively we can be brilliant. But if you rely on one person to manage a single project or a single client, we don't get the brilliance of a wider team.
Well, that's the joy of communications. And it's this kind of magic fairy dust that people go, oh, PR. And I've had CEOs in the past like wave their hand at me. I'm like, it isn't magic. It's hard work, but it is magic when you get the right people on a project and that it all happens. And that collaborative approach. People ask me, why do I go to co-working office? Because I cannot be working on my own solo. I get really bored in my own company. And that human connection, I think, makes or breaks any job. Culture actually is such a buzzword these days, and people talk about brand development as the community growth. It's all about community and culture. I know from our conversations from years and years ago, you've always been so thoughtful about your people, and I was always in awe of how much you put your people first within your team, because I was working at brands at the time that couldn't care less about their people. How have you been a champion of culture from the get-go?
I think I've always been very clear on my values. Values when it comes to how I care about people, our employees, our clients, the brands, having a really strong moral compass about what is right and wrong, what's appropriate and not appropriate. Yes, we're service providers, but we're not here to say yes to every request that comes through from every client, because sometimes it doesn't align with our values or it doesn't align with what is responsible strategic advice. I think taking care of people comes in many ways. You know, we can do the fun stuff, the sort of togetherness, the social element of work. We do quite a lot on the wellness side. I like, and actually this is something that came out in my insights discovery report, is that don't talk to me in a really formal way. I like informality. I like gatherings that feel not so business-like. So I really enjoy bringing people together, and for example, in a wellness retreat in the countryside.
That's not your clients or the press. That's your team you're doing that with, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I think taking people out of the office into an environment where it's very relaxed, it's very informal, you're connecting with each other on an equal ground, regardless of age, seniority, job title. It's actually just meeting people on a human level. And I feel like that's where the magic happens, and we get to know each other and people feel relaxed. And I enjoy that. I think maybe I get more out of it than anyone else, because, you know, sometimes there is a weight of responsibility that comes with being a founder and the expectations of you.
It's every day you have that responsibility. So how often would you do, say, an offsite with your team?
We do quarterly wellness get-togethers, and that's usually in London, whether it's breathwork or movement. And I encourage people to come to me and make suggestions. And then we do an annual sort of off-site Unite retreat, which, yeah, I think is important. We do invest a lot in people from a kind of staff development standpoint. And I think this is related to your question on emotional intelligence, an element which I think is extremely important to people that we hire is that they have an appetite to learn and an ambition to grow and develop, and that they are able to receive feedback in the spirit that it's meant, because we do invest a lot in training, very regular checkups, you know, the formal kind of 6-month annual appraisals, detailed KPIs, but it's the regular check-ins from line management. And I think where people really, really thrive is when they realize that the feedback that they are being delivered is for their benefit, for their professional growth, not just for the business. And yes, there's always a risk that they could take that elsewhere. And I'm not naive enough to think we keep staff forever. And I've had amazing people who have worked for me and gone on to do brilliant things elsewhere. But I think being able to receive feedback well and listen and action is extremely important for their own professional, also their personal development.
Well, also, not every boss is going to be like you. And actually, a colleague of mine said this. It's like, it's quite good when you're not actually in the office, because we overhear other businesses nearby and how awful they are to their teams. It's like, oh, I'm taking that as a compliment and as a win, because they don't know what they don't know. You and I have worked for a number of years for other people, yeah, and in business, and we've met a lot of people, but experience is what you get after you've needed it. And I think, as much as I want to nurture and protect my team, I know they will leave at some point. And I've said to them, when you're ready, let me know and I'll help you get a job somewhere else, because I'd much rather help you find the right job. And they're like, are you joking? I was like, well, no, because A, you're going to give me more notice to replace you. But B, let's just be really honest about this. And I'd love the feedback. And actually going through B Corp was amazing, because it's all about feedback. It's like asking all the tricky questions, because then you know where you stand. And I don't know what you think about this, but there's various commentary on different generations of how they behave at work and their expectations of what work should give them. It's like, no, you are here to earn a salary. That seems to be slightly forgotten. And I remember working at Burberry till midnight most nights, and you know those lights that are motion sensored, and I'd have to roll my chair back from my desk to turn the light back on because it kept going off because I was the only one left in the office. And I kick myself now being that stupid to work that hard, but I learned so much from that experience, and I learned and developed, and I knew what I had in me. But I do feel that kind of balance of that give and take has shifted over the recent years. Leading question.
It's a leading question. I think there was a time, probably for the first 10 years, that most of my people, and we were a smaller business, but most of my employees had very luckily been with me since they graduated, which was amazing. That level of loyalty and care and connectedness between us. And a number of them have moved on and gone on to do brilliant things. And I had to recruit from other businesses and actually other sectors. And that was quite daunting. However, bringing in talent from lots of other brands, in-house and agencies, has helped communicate downwards that not every business perhaps takes care of people so well or invests in their development. Because in those 10 years where my wonderful team had been with me for so long, they didn't know any different. And to be fair, I don't know any different because I've worked for myself for 15 years. So I don't know what's out there in the big bad world.
Oh, no. Well, I can tell you, I've witnessed your team, and I've witnessed the birthdays, and I've witnessed the celebrations, I've witnessed the offsites. It is unusual how much you invest in your people, and our confidential conversations one-on-one, I know how much you really care. Like, it's always about your team first. I rarely hear about press and clients when we have chats, which I think is really special and really unusual. We're taking a quick 30-second break from this episode to ask, are you thinking of starting your own podcast? If so, this is great news, because we run a course that will train you how to produce your own podcast yourself. This course is for people who do not want to outsource and pay someone else to do it. You want to learn how to do it yourself. We teach you everything that you need to get up and running with your own podcast show and so much more. Just DM us at hello@Fallowfield Mason to book your spot.
Well, it weighs heavily on me. Thank you for acknowledging that. There's always more that one can do, but we are a business after all. And whilst it's very important to cultivate a workplace and a culture and a team that enjoy what they do and feel that they're growing and learning and being taken care of, I've definitely been quite soft at some times. Actually, I need practical people around me to create the efficiencies and the processes, because actually the more efficient we are, the more time people can have for the benefits, the additional holiday, the remote working, etc. You can't have it all. So there's got to be the work ethic, the graft, the results, hitting KPIs, listening to your feedback and developing, and then you can have the benefits. You can't have one without the other, if that makes sense.
That's a very diplomatic answer to my question about, say, the 20-year-olds coming into the workforce who are like, well, I need 60 days annual leave and I want a pay rise immediately. And it's like, well, what value have you added back to the business? My head of HR in Australia for Chanel was amazing. She's like, if you can come at me with your job description and show me everything in green is what we pay you to do, and then everything in red is what you're doing in addition that we're not paying you for, we might have an opportunity to grow your role. I was like, oh, well, it's simple as that. And then every negotiation I've ever gone into an MD with is like, this is what I'm contracted to. This is the value I'm already adding on top. Can you give me a pay rise? I've proven my worth. They're like, sure, it's a no-brainer. And especially when you're dealing with money people who don't understand PR and don't want to understand PR, it's a very black and white system for them. But I think it was that kind of hack around it, because lots of women typically in comms would be like, but they must know I want a pay rise. No business is going to give away money unless they can see a return. It's business sense. But yeah, it's a hard one to manage when you care about your team.
That is such smart advice, because you're right. I think I sometimes feel ancient when I'm sharing anecdotes with my Gen Z employees, and I really try not to. But back in the day, you know, we were just trained to always consider what you could take off your line manager, because if you can make their life easier and help promote them, then there's space for you to grow. And I think if someone comes to me with a succession plan, basically being solution focused, you know, this is the value I'm bringing, and also looking at it from a commercial standpoint, but also just considering a succession plan. You can't let go of tasks and responsibilities unless you can come up with a proposal on how they're going to get done. So just being smart with how you manage up to your line managers, because that's just deeply impressive if someone comes and they're showing more of a sort of entrepreneurial mindset. And I'm really lucky that I have a senior team now who really, they're business minded. And I love that. It feels very collaborative.
And then they reap the rewards. As you say, we're all in it together, and we wouldn't have businesses without our people. So it's a virtuous circle, hopefully not a vicious one. You said before that the hardest part of running a business are those invisible skills and output that you need to have. Can you share what those have been for you?
Yes. So in the early days, when I was wearing lots of hats and doing everything, being out and about, managing every relationship, hosting every press trip, being front and center with every event, every client meeting was part and part of being a startup. That's also not sustainable. You know, a founder, a leader, being front and center across everything doesn't empower the next generation of leaders to step up, but it also doesn't give you any space for thinking, creativity, and strategy.
Someone said to me recently, you burn the candle at both ends and you burn really bright. I was like, no, you burn out.
Yes. Yes, yes. And I have definitely had periods of suffering from burnout. I can get very overexcited about brands, people, projects, ideas. I love being with people. I get energized by being in community, by bouncing ideas. However, I also need time to replenish and reflect. And I think I've learned that I need to carve out that time and be less apologetic about it. Just be offline, do the things that help me show up as a leader more effectively. And that might be investing in my own well-being. That might be carving out a big chunk of time for my own coaching, or just being reflective on the future, because I think it's very easy to be stuck in the weeds, and it's very challenging to show up as a leader in the right headspace with the right energy if you are overbooked and running from X to Y.
And I feel like that busy fool, I think it was a guest, it's episode 4, way back 4 years ago, said this is like, don't be a busy fool, because there's so many things you could do. It's actually taking the time out to work out what you should do. And it sounds like your coach has really helped pull you out the weeds and see bigger picture. Is there any advice you'd give anyone about how to find a coach?
I think coach is a different stage of your life. Like, I've worked with people at the beginning who, I think I've always been good at the softer side of business, the sort of culture, values, integrity. I needed help on practical. And then I got to a stage where I needed help on scaling. And then I became a mother And I needed help on how to be a working mother because I didn't have role models around me, as wonderful as my own mother is. I didn't grow up with a lot of working women around me. So I literally had no idea how to mother and run a business. So I needed coaching that really supported that stage of my life. So I think there are different resources and different coaches for different types of businesses and different human beings and different life stages. I think as women, we go through lots of different stages of life and hormones. And I think making sure that you pull in the right resources for those different stages is quite important.
Yeah. So be really honest with the precise bit of the thing that you need help with and go after a coach that can support on that. You are a female-led business hiring so far only women, plus you have two daughters. How do you feel women's health should be managed and supported within business? It's a hot topic, and I know the law may be changing around, say, menopausal leave, but how have you tackled this?
It's a very good question. And I'm not shy to admit that I've been through a pretty turbulent few years at a perimenopausal state. I had no idea what was going on. There really wasn't as much knowledge even in the medical world. There weren't resources to go to. And I was quite deep into that journey when I actually realized what was going on. And it explained a few things. And I think I made a decision, even though it was deeply personal, to share with some of my colleagues what was going on, because I knew that my fuse was shorter. I wasn't as sharp as maybe they had been used to. I was losing my train of thought in the middle of, you know, a really important strategy meeting. And it felt really quite frightening to me. Whilst when I didn't know what was going on, it felt deeply frightening, and I felt less mentally strong and energetically able to show up how I was used to, but I didn't realize what was going on. As the employer of lots of women, and as you say, as the mother of girls, there's no shame in it. So I did want to share with some of my coworkers, and I think I got a lot of compassion from their response. And I hope that if they go through, which they probably will, a similar stage, then they won't feel ashamed to admit to whether it's me or another employer or people they're line managing what's going on, because we're all going to go through these things as women. Having babies when you are the owner of a business is challenging. I think there isn't enough support for self-employed mothers. I really cannot get my head around how the lack of government support about being self-employed as a mother. And I do think there needs to be more resources available for businesses around perimenopause, menopause, how we can support our hormonal health in a business context, and how we can get to know ourselves.
Yeah, no, I completely get it, because I've had a turbulent few years in my personal life, and actually starting a business was quite good for me in terms of it gave me an anchor and a purpose and a focus. But then I had COVID a few times, mental health issues a few times, burnout a few times, and I'm definitely heading into perimenopause. And I was like, most things, especially you get really good at hacking way through life, especially when you start a business, you're like, you find the solution every time. I can't avoid menopause. It's coming for me whether I like it or not, because I'm a woman. I am deeply enraged how unfair this is. And it started, the kind of penny dropped when I realized that all the guys I go to the gym with before the co-working office are at their desks at least 20 minutes before me, because I'm drying my hair, putting a makeup on. And they're like, well, Jules, you don't have to do that. And it's like, I kind of do. I've been brought up that unless I'm a bit like business ready, I don't feel presented. And also want to, but I'm 20 minutes behind them every day. That's time I'm not going to get back. So yeah, that was just the kind of tip of the iceberg. And then the perimenopause thing, I was so proud of my team. A colleague came in one day and she said to him, oh, sorry guys, it's a bad day. I've got PMT. I've got really bad cramps. And I looked at her and I was like, I would have never said that out loud when I worked in an office. And I was so proud she felt confident enough. And he's like, I'm going to make you a cup of tea. They were both 25. And I just thought, why did we not have this liberty when we were in offices before? And then with menopause, there's something shaming about the fact that your body's letting you down and it's not as functional, or you've got brain fog. Also, there's 100 different symptoms that are coming our way and we don't know which ones we're going to get. So are there resources that you'd want to point people towards if they're listening to this and they want a bit more support on the subject?
It's a good question. I will share some resources with you. There's some excellent doctors that really helped me understand what was going on. It's interesting because, I mean, I've obviously not been employed by another business for a long time, but I have friends who work for big corporations in advertising or branding. And there's increasingly in these big companies, which I think is brilliant, because they are acknowledging that they are losing excellent, small, ambitious women at a certain time, because those women don't know what's going on and they can't handle the level of responsibility or leadership that is required from their job. So they exit because they don't know what's going on. It's similar with marriage. You know, a lot of women leave their husbands or, you know, abandon their families for a period of time, have major crises because they don't know what's going on. So as an employer, if you could help signpost some of the symptoms and lead them to resources to get the support to manage those symptoms better, then you might keep people.
God, it's ridiculous, isn't it? We go through education, then we develop our skills, we work our way up a ladder, we then potentially get married and have kids. And then you get through all of that and then you get hit with perimenopause and then menopause. And it feels like one challenge after another. And we all know from the Alison Rose review, $250 billion is missing from the UK economy because women are not encouraged to start businesses at the same rate as men. And if they were, the entire GDP would benefit. So it is with the greater good in mind that this should be fixed.
Exactly. And also, to be really effective at Oracle, you do need to have an element of sensitivity and understanding the nuances of different people and different brands and really dialing up that kind of emotional intelligence side of what we do.
It's hard to teach that as well. So you've been in business 15 years, you've run what from the outside looks like a very successful travel company. And now I have worked in travel myself. I know how hard that is. Your reputation always precedes you. And actually, you've built a brand bigger than just you now with your team. With that, you've held on to a lot of clients over the 15 years. What is that secret to those long-term partnerships? Because in any service-based business, that is the kind of mecca.
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate it. I think I've learned from previous roles as well, where there was a fast turnaround. And I remember being an account director and leading a team. And because I was always a hard grafter and I went the extra mile and I'd work weekends if I needed to get the job done, I was just given too many clients. And I was at, you know, 27 and reaching a level of overwhelm that just was not manageable. So I always think of that 27-year-old self. And I think it's probably twofold. Being really selective about the brands that we agree to work with, making sure that there's enough love, passion, excitement, interest for us to be super effective, not overwhelming my team. I think if we took every brief that came our way, there simply isn't enough talent to resource the business. There is, unfortunately, quite a lot of mediocrity in PR, and I just can't hire ineffective people who don't have the skills but also aren't the kindred spirit who share our values. It's just not worth it for me. I'd far prefer to be a smaller, perfectly structured business with incredible clients that we grow year on year than taking every bit of business that comes our way. So I think we've always been mindful of saying no to clients that either don't align with our interests or our values, or that we just don't have the capacity to resource. Because if you end up in a situation where you're winning clients and you cannot service them, you're going to overwhelm your team and people leave, or you're going to neglect some of your legacy clients. And I've always been very careful. I want to retain clients. I think the more exciting work comes, not, you know, everyone loves a launch, everyone loves an opening. And yes, it can be high pressure and complex, but where the really exciting work kicks in is 3-4 years after launch, where you have to get more creative with partnerships and community building and story development and concept development. So we've always been careful to balance like the newness and the fun and the exciting brands that open the doors with really taking care of these clients that we've looked after for a long time. And actually, we did a bit of an audit of results across the business the other day. And I was really thrilled to see that one of our longest standing clients that we have looked after since the beginning, a lovely collection of properties in Ecuador and Galapagos, and their results are at the highest. And we've had them for 15 years. Because we have to get creative every year to keep the momentum going.
This is so interesting. Firstly, thank you for giving PR a good name, because this is why a lot of people hate PR, because they get sold the account director. It's the intern behind the scenes that's pitching that's never met a journalist in their life. The results don't come through. They get frustrated, like, well, we pay for PR, it's such a waste of money. And I then hear this and I get really cross, because it's like, no, it is magic. It's so beautiful when it works. And that's where you and your brain work really well, because you've got past the launch. Anyone can do a launch. It's new news. A journalist wants to know new news. When there is no new news and you get creative and you have to think of those partnerships and you're in the business, you know it really well at year three, year four. That, I completely agree, is where the magic happens and where a company like yours can really support as an external business where it doesn't work and where I then win business is when they've had a shitty relationship with an agency that they've never seen anything from. They don't have any results to say what they've spent their money on. And then I train them to do it in-house because they're fed up and they're like, fine, I give up. I want PR. I need PR. I hate PR. I'm like, great. So this is where I love you because you've done such a good job and you give PR such a good name. The journalists love you. The clients love you. Your team love you. It works and PR can be celebrated. So thank you. You're breaking the mold.
God bless you. I think also we're not here to PR ourselves and our business. We want to be the secret weapon. So actually, I often say to my team, your job is to make your direct client look excellent and meet their KPIs. We're behind the scenes creating the magic, helping on strategy, doing the advisory so that they look brilliant. It is not about us. It's about elevating their brands.
And for the listeners, it's taken me 3 years to persuade you to do this because you're like, it's not about you. And you do it all behind the scenes. I think at your 15-year birthday for Bird, you did a speech and you're like, it's not normally me speaking about me. And that's what makes you brilliant. We're the kind of like puppet masters behind the scenes that people think we just go for long lunches and drink champagne, if only. But yeah, it's amazing when it works. But you need that collaborative approach. Finally, what advice would you give to other founders looking to build businesses that prioritize people without compromising on performance? Given you are the expert at this.
Don't think you have all the answers and that you can teach them everything. I think for a period of time, I felt like I was expected to coach and train and develop them. And actually, there's only so much I can teach them. Bringing in external resources to help with coaching and development and inspiration has been really, really helpful. And also identifying people within your organization who could step up and train them on certain areas of specialism.
So really look externally. And know that you cannot be a master of all trades. You have to pick your skill set and then delegate the rest.
Exactly. And also someone gave me some great advice when I remember when I was looking to set up and I was panicking over the administrative side of the business. And I was literally having sleepless nights over spreadsheets and invoicing and payroll and HR and how to write a contract. And someone just said to me, you worry about all the things that you need to worry about when you've got the clients. Focus on your skill set. Focus on winning the clients and outsource those things. So literally from day one, I outsourced brilliant administration, brilliant bookkeeping and accounting and forecasting. And I've had a very long-term partnership with an HR agency for about 12, 13 years. Yes, you know my business inside out. So having external resources who are complete experts allows you to focus on where your time is really valued.
And I've sort of learned this the long, hard way. When I started the business, we were focusing on PR and teaching businesses how to learn their PR. And now we offer podcast production and it marries our soft skills of communications with the techie, nerdy part of my brain that I quite enjoy. And you would be like, oh, get that software away from me. But it's that knowing my strengths and people are like, well, on your website, why aren't you saying you could work for big luxury brands? I'm like, I could, but I'm choosing not to. And it's that autonomy when you run your business of knowing what you want to do. You're going to work bloody hard. You're going to work like you've never worked before. You may as well enjoy it. So for me, leaning into the podcast side of things has been such a joy because my brain is happy. I'm deeply passionate about it. I want to focus on it. And you get that flow state when I do anyway, when I'm editing. That's the bit of business I love so much. But being really honest with yourself about your strengths and your weaknesses, I think can game change. Also, how much you enjoy your job. And given you've made it up for yourself, you may as well.
And I really agree with that reference of being in flow state, hence why we've been really picky about the brands that we want to work with and the human beings behind them. You know, actually, it's not all about a brand or a destination. It's about who's the personality, the human, the creator, the visionary behind it. Because I love working with entrepreneurs. I love working with true visionaries. So the humans behind a brand is as important as the actual product.
Especially in PR, because you're having to translate it for them. They're coming to you because they can't do it themselves. So it's being able to pick up their baby and get it out into the world. You need to like them. You need to trust them and admire what they do. And then it's so lovely when you can come to them and help extract that story for them. And then everybody's happy. And that's where PR can be so wonderful. And I look back at some of our clients and look at the coverage we've got them and I'm proud of it. They're proud of it. They're happy. We're happy. And I think my mission at the beginning was to make sure people celebrated PR and didn't loathe it. So that when it works, it's dreamy. So we have a question from our previous guest, who is Rachel Harris, accountant. She and StriveX founder. Interviewing her and then you has been a complete goal week for me, because you've been, both of you, on my list for a number of years. Her question for you was that StriveX core value is don't be a dick. What is your core value in your business?
I think similarly, have integrity, have a strong moral compass, and know what's right or wrong. I'm a very sort of feely person. I find my way through energy, which is why I need people around me who back my decisions through data.
Interesting. And then what would your question be for the next guest? And it could be anything on entrepreneurship.
How to get the best out of Gen Z employees, how to adapt leadership style and create future leaders of that generation.
Great. I'm writing this down.
Because I'm definitely at a stage of it's investing in the next generation of leaders. And I've got down one, two levels. And I now need to look at the managerial, the more juniors, because I'm always trying to think about the legacy of the business and the future.
And it creeps up on you. Suddenly you're at 15 years and, oh goodness, what's the next five look like? Time flies. I've never seen anything like it in business. So that constant future-proofing, I think, is super important. Thank you, Daisy, so much. As always, I've always loved our chats, but I'm so, so thrilled that you're now on How to Start Up. And thank you for all your advice and best of luck with the next 15 years.
Thank you, Juliet.
Thank you for listening to our 12 Days of Christmas from How to Start Up. If you have enjoyed this episode, please rate and review the show, because it honestly makes a massive difference to the podcast being found by other people and to me as your host. It's nice to know you're there. Our normal scheduling will resume in January 2026, and we wish you a very, very merry festive season and hope you get some rest.